supreme being, your concept of and what you think holds the universe together. Truth. What you think about it. Which truths are most important? Uniqueness. What you think makes each of us unique. Values. What you think about humanity. What you think about the world. Prioritized as to what matters most to you. When you are done writing, put a summary paragraph on Petal 4, your goal, purpose, or mission in life. Now, on to another side of who you are. I am a person who already has and loves these particular knowledges or interests. Fifth Petal. My favorite knowledges, interests, subjects. Goal in filling out this petal. To summarize all that you have stored in your brain, required from your past, subjects you already know a lot about and enjoy talking about. Optional, for your future, what you would like to learn. What you are looking for. Some guidance as to what field you would most enjoy working in. Form of the entries on your petal. Basically, they will all turn out to be nouns. Example of a good petal. Graphic design, data analysis, mathematics, how to repair a car, video games, cooking, music, principles of mechanical engineering, how to run an organization, Chinese language, etc. Example of a bad petal. Prompt, thorough, analyzing, persistent, communicating. Why bad? Knowledges are always nouns. The words in the bad example above are not. In case you're curious, they are, in order, a trait, adjective, a trait, adjective, a transferable skill, verb, a trait, adjective, and a transferable skill, verb. All in all, that is one mixed bag. All are important, but you want only knowledges on this particular petal. As mentioned in Petal 3, there are three things traditionally called skills. Knowledges, as here, functions, also known as transferable skills, and traits or self-management skills. And as we saw there, a general rule throughout this inventory is that knowledges are nouns, transferable skills are verbs, and traits are adjectives or adverbs. If it helps knowing that, great. If not, forget it. Our overarching principle throughout this book is that if a generalization or metaphor or example helps you, use it. But if it just confuses you, then ignore it. On this Petal 5, you will eventually write your final results, your favorite knowledges or fields of interest, prioritized in the order of importance to you. Petal 5, Worksheet Number 1. Q&A. 10 shortcuts for identifying your favorite knowledges, subjects, fields, or interests, whatever you wish to call them. On a blank sheet of paper, jot down your answers to any or all of these 10 shortcuts. 1. What are your favorite hobbies or fields where you like to spend a lot of your time? Computers? Gardening? Spanish? Law? Physics? Department stores? Hospitals? Etc., etc. Start a list. 2. What do you love to talk about? Ask yourself, if you were stuck on a desert island with a person who only had the capacity to speak on a few subjects, what would you pray those subjects were? If you were at a get-together talking with someone who was covering two of your favorite subjects at once, which way would you hope the conversation would go? Toward which subject? If you could talk about something with some world expert all day long, day after day, what would that subject or field of interest be? Add any ideas that these questions spark in you to your list. 3. What magazine articles do you love to read? I mean, what subjects? You get really interested when you see a magazine article that deals with what subject? Add any ideas to your list. 4. What newspaper articles do you love to read? You get really interested when you see a newspaper special report that deals with what subject. Add any ideas here to your list. 5. If you're browsing in a bookstore, what sections of the bookstore do you tend to gravitate toward? What subjects there do you find really fascinating? Add any ideas here to your list. 6. What sites on the internet do you tend to gravitate toward? What subjects do these sites deal with? Do any of these really fascinate you? Add any ideas here to your list. 7. If you watch TV and it's a game show, which categories would you pick? If it's an educational program, what kinds of subjects do you stop and watch? Add them to your list. 8. When you look at a catalog of courses that you could take in your town or city, or on the internet, which subjects really interest you? Add any ideas here to your list. 9. If you could write a book, and it wasn't about your own life or somebody else's, what would be the subject of the book? Add it to your list. 10. There are moments in most of our lives when we are so engrossed in a task that we lose all track of time. Someone has to remind us that it's time for supper, or whatever. If this ever happens to you, what task, what subject so absorbs your attention that you lose all track of time? Add it to your list. Petal 5, Worksheet Number 2. Chart of all the things you've learned. The Fisherman's Net. You may want to copy the Fisherman's Net chart from the PDF files included with this audiobook onto a larger piece of paper, leaving much more space beneath the title for each of the 4 parts before you start filling it in. The 4 parts of the Fisherman's Net are: what I know from my previous jobs, what I know about or picked up outside of work, what fields, careers, or industries sound interesting to me, and any other hunches, bright ideas, great ideas, etc. that occur to me. This chart is like a commercial fisherman's net, where you want to cast it into the sea in order to capture the largest haul of fish possible, and only later do you pick out the best from your haul. But we start big. How to fill out this chart? Well, that's your choice. You may want to fill this out at one sitting, or you may prefer to keep it in your pocket and jot down anything that occurs to you over a period of 2 or 3 weeks. Every bright idea, every hunch, every remembered dream, every intuition that pops up. This is an important petal, very important, as it may help you unearth a field or fields where you would really like to work. So it's worth spending some time on. Now, here are some hints to help you fill in the first 3 parts of the chart. Part 1, what you know from your previous jobs. If you've been out there in the world of work for some time, you've probably learned a lot of things that you now just take for granted. Of course I know that. But such knowledges may be important in and of themselves, or they may point you to something important down the line. So don't be afraid to get really detailed. Examples. It can be things like bookkeeping, handling applications, credit collection of overdue accounts, hiring, international business, management, marketing, sales, merchandising, packaging, policy development, problem solving, troubleshooting, public speaking, recruiting, conference planning, systems analysis, the culture of other countries, other languages, government contract procedures, and so on. Think of each job you've ever held, and then for each job, jot down any system or procedure that you learned there. For example, worked in a warehouse, learned how to use a forklift and crane, inventory control, logistics automation software, warehouse management systems, teamwork principles, and how to supervise employees. Or, worked at a fast food place, learned how to prepare and serve food, how to wait on customers, how to make change, how to deal with complaints, how to train new employees, etc. Part 2, what you know outside of work. Jot down any bodies of knowledge that you picked up on your own just because the subject fascinated you, such as antiques, gardening, cooking, budgeting, decorating, photography, crafts, spirituality, sports, camping, travel, repairing things, flea markets, scrapbooking, sewing, art appreciation at museums, how to run or work in a volunteer organization, and so on. A. Also think of anything you learned in high school or college that you prize knowing today. Keyboarding? Chinese? Accounting? Geography? Is this knowledge important to you? Figure that out later. For now, your goal is to just cast as wide a net as possible. B. Think of anything you learned at training seminars, workshops, conferences, and so on, possibly in connection with a job you had at the time, or something you decided to attend on your own. Jot it all down. Is this knowledge important to you? Figure that out later. For now, your goal is to just cast as wide a net as possible. C. Think of anything you studied at home via online courses, mobile apps, tape programs, likely played in your car while commuting, PBS television programs, etc. Is this knowledge important to you? Figure that out later. For now, your goal is to just cast as wide a net as possible. Jot it all down. D. Think of anything you learned out there in the world, such as how to assemble a flash mob, how to organize a protest, how to fundraise for a particular cause, how to run a marathon, how to repair a toilet, etc. Is this knowledge important to you? Figure that out later. For now, your goal is to just cast as wide a net as possible. Jot it all down in the second section of the chart. Part 3. What fields, careers, or industries sound interesting to you? Broadly speaking, the workplace consists of the following 6 branches: agriculture, manufacturing, information, technology, finance, and services. Any ideas about which of these 6 is most attractive to you right off the bat? If so, jot your answer down in the third section of the chart. In order to drill down further into these 6, your best bet is the government's ONET Online, www.onetonline.org. ONET Online has various lists of career clusters or industries or job families. Below is a mashup of these. From the following list, copy down any of these that you want to explore further. Multiple choices preferred here in order to have alternatives, and therefore hope, in the third section of the chart. Accommodation and food services. Administrative and support services. Agriculture, food, and natural resources. Architecture, engineering, and construction. Arts, audio-video technology, and communications. Business, operations, management, and administration. Community and social services. Computer and mathematical. Design, entertainment, sports, and media. Distribution and logistics. Education, training, and library. Entertainment and recreation. Farming, forestry, fishing, and hunting. Finance and insurance. Food preparation and serving. Government and public administration. Green industries or jobs. Healthcare, health science, and social assistance. Hospitality and tourism. Human services. Information and information technology. Law, public safety, corrections, and security. Life, physical, and social sciences. Management of companies and enterprises. Manufacturing. Marketing, sales, and service. Military related. Mining, quarrying, and oil and gas extraction. Personal care and service. Production. Professional, scientific, and technical services. Protective services. real estate, rental, and leasing. Religion, faith, and related. Retail trade, sales, and related. Science, technology, engineering, and mathematics. Self-employment. Transportation, warehousing, and material moving. Utilities. Now, the nice thing about O-Net Online is that once you have chosen anything on the list above, the site has drop-down menus which allow you to go deeper into each career cluster, industry, or job family that you have checked off. It drills down to career pathways, and then drills down further to individual occupations, and then drills down still further to tasks, tools, technologies, knowledges, skills, abilities, work activities, education, interests, work styles, work values, related occupations, and salary. The only limitation here, as you will see in our Chapter 11, the five ways to choose or change careers, is that O-Net only does this for about 900 occupations. Its immediate predecessor, the DOT, had 12,741 occupations listed. So O-Net does not offer a complete map of the job market by any means. And even for those occupations that are listed in O-Net, remember, jobs, industries, and careers are mortal. They are born, they grow, they mature, they flourish, then decline, and ultimately die. Sometimes it takes centuries, sometimes merely decades, sometimes even sooner than that. But eventually, most jobs, industries, and careers are mortal. It doesn't matter if they were killed off by China or Mexico or other supposed villains. They would have died anyway, eventually. We are mortal, so are jobs. Understand that truth, and you will avoid a life of bitterness and blame. In today's world, you must always have a plan B up your sleeves. Petal 5, Worksheet Number 3. Prioritizing Your Knowledges, Favorite Subjects Matrix. Okay, now you've completed Worksheet Number 2. You've cast as wide a commercial fisherman's net, so to speak, as possible, using Worksheet Number 1 and Worksheet Number 2 for this petal. What now? Well, it's time to pick the best of your haul, as we indicated earlier. Time to look it all over and decide which knowledges, subjects, or interests are your favorites. Time for prioritizing. But we're going to use a different kind of prioritizing aid here. Not our familiar grid, but four boxes or compartments or bins along the axes of expertise and enthusiasm, ranked either high or low. In other words, a matrix. You'll find the favorite subjects matrix in the PDF files included with this audiobook. You should copy this matrix onto a much larger piece of paper before you begin. Then copy everything you have written down on worksheet number 1, 10 shortcuts, and worksheet number 2, the chart, and decide which of the four bins it belongs in as you weigh your expertise, or lack of it, and your enthusiasm, or lack of it, with that particular subject or knowledge. You don't have to copy anything into bin number 4, low expertise, low enthusiasm, if you don't want to, except if you want bin number 4 to stand there filled with subjects and knowledges that you don't care about as a cautionary tale. I'll state the obvious. Any knowledge that you have neither any expertise in nor any enthusiasm for is a knowledge you will want to avoid at all costs in a future job, if it's up to you. And it is. Once you have finished copying every knowledge from worksheets number 1 and number 2 into one of these bins, go back and study only what you put into bin number 1, high expertise, high enthusiasm. Copy what you consider to be your top 4 or 5 favorites from that bin. Use a prioritizing grid if you need to, And maybe, just maybe, one item from bin number two, low expertise, high enthusiasm, and put them on pedal number five. Bueno, your favorite subjects, knowledges, fields, interests, whatever you want to call them, is done. Now you're ready to move on to consider the sixth side of who you are. I am a person who prefers a certain level of responsibility and salary. Sixth pedal. My preferred level of responsibility and salary. Goal in filling out this pedal: to gain a realistic picture of how much money you will need to earn or want to earn at whatever job you find. What you are looking for. A range. Because most employers are thinking in terms of a range too. When you negotiate salary, as you will almost certainly have to, if the employer is of any significant size, you want the bottom of your range to be near the top of theirs. Form of the entries on your pedal. Total dollars needed weekly, monthly, or annually. Stated in thousands. Symbol K. Example of a good pedal. 75K to 85K. Example of a bad pedal. 500K. Why bad? Well, it's not a range, which it needs to be, and it's too high, unless you have a reason why such a high income is expected, and, more importantly, justified. Pedal 6, Introduction. A crash course about money. Money is important, or else we're reduced to bartering for our food, clothing, and shelter. So when we're out of work, unless we have huge amounts of money in our savings account or investments, we are inevitably thinking, what am I going to do so that I have enough money to put food on the table, clothes on my back, and a roof over our heads, for myself and for my family or partner, if I have one? Happiness is important too. So we may find ourselves thinking, how much do I really need to be earning for me to be truly happy with my life? Are these two worries, money and happiness, related? Can money buy happiness? Partly, it turns out, partly. A study, published in 2010, of the responses of 450,000 people in the U.S. to a daily survey, found that the less money they made, the more unhappy they tended to be day after day. No surprise there. And obviously, the more money they made, measured in terms of percentage improvement, the happier they tended to be, as measured by the frequency and intensity of moments of smiling, laughter, affection, and joy all day long, versus moments of sadness, worry, and stress. So, money does buy happiness, but only up to a point. That point was found to be around $75,000 annual income. At the end of 2011, median household income was $51,413. If people made more money than $75,000, it of course further improved their satisfaction with how life was going, but it did not increase their happiness. Above $75,000, they started to report reduced ability to spend time with people they liked, to enjoy leisure, and to savor small pleasures. Happiness depends on things like that, and on other factors too: good health, a loving relationship, loving friends, and a feeling of competence, gaining mastery, respect, praise, or even love, because we are really good at what we do. So this pedal cannot be filled out all by itself. It is inextricably tied to the other pedals, most particularly to what you love to do and where you love to do it. Still, salary is something you must think out ahead of time when you're contemplating your ideal job or career. Level goes hand in hand with salary, of course. So here are a couple of questions you should be asking yourself. 1. At what level would you like to work in your ideal job? Level is a matter of how much responsibility you want in an organization. boss, or CEO. This may mean you'll have to form your own business. Manager or someone under the boss who carries out orders. The head of a team. A member of a team of equals. One who works in tandem with one other partner. One who works alone as an employee, a consultant to an organization, or a one-person business. Think carefully about your answer. Talk it over with your friends or family. Then enter a 2 or 3 word summary of your answer, for now, on Petal 6, the preferred salary and level of responsibility of your flower diagram. 2. What salary would you like to be aiming for? Here, you have to think in terms of a range, not a single figure. One way to do this is to think of your minimum or maximum desired. Minimum is what you would need to make if you were just barely getting by. And incidentally, you do need to know this before you go in for a job interview with anyone, or before you form your own business and need to know how much profit you must make just to survive. You can't survive on a negative income stream. Maximum could be any astronomical figure you can think of, but it is more useful here to put down the salary you realistically think you could make, with your present competency and experience, were you working for a real but generous boss. If this maximum figure is still depressingly low, then put down the salary you would like to be making 5 years from now. Petal 6, Worksheet Number 1. A budget. Keeping track of how much you do spend and how much you'd like to spend. Many job hunters and career changers want to begin by making up a budget of what they think they will need, such as housing, food, clothing, medical, etc. In the PDF files included in this audiobook, you will find a simple guide to all the categories you will need to think about. Figure out what you think you will need monthly in each category. And if you see any categories missing, do not hesitate to add them. Many do not want to start with a budget of how they should spend their money. They want to start by first keeping track of how, in actual fact, they do spend their money. You can just jot down notes at the end of each day. Lots of apps make this task much easier. For example, there is Spending Tracker, Pocket Expense, Good Budget, and for all those who want to sync with their bank accounts, Mint.com. Your checkbook stubs and or online banking records will tell you a lot of this stuff, but you may be vague about your cash or credit card expenditures. For example, you may not know how much you spend at the supermarket or how much you spend on gas, etc. But there is a simple way to find out. Keep notes on your smartphone or iPad for 2 weeks. There are apps for that, such as Daily Cost, 99 cents. Jot down everything you pay cash or use credit cards for on the spot, right after you pay it. At the end of those 2 weeks, you'll be able to take that record and make a realistic guess of what should be put down in these categories that now puzzle you. Multiply the 2 week figure by 2, and you'll have the monthly figure. The good news, all these apps are simple, and almost all are free. Incidentally, for U.S. citizens, looking ahead to next April 15th, be sure to check with your local IRS office or a reputable accountant to find out if you can deduct the expenses of your job hunt on your federal and state income tax returns. At this writing, some job hunters can, if, big if, this is not your first job that you're looking for, if you haven't been unemployed too long, and if you aren't making a career change. Do go find out what the latest ifs are. If the IRS says you are eligible, keep careful receipts of everything related to your job hunt as you go along. Telephone calls, stationery, printing, postage, travel, etc. Once you figure out what you do spend, you'll be much better able to lay out a realistic budget of what you want to spend. In any event, by hook or by crook, Once you have your monthly budget, it's time to do some math. Multiply the total amount you need each month by 12 to get the yearly figure. Divide the yearly figure by 2,000, and you will be reasonably near the minimum hourly wage that you need. Thus, if you need $3,333 per month, multiplied by 12, that's $40,000 a year. And then divided by 2,000, that's $20 an hour. You will also want to put down the maximum salary you would like to make. Dream, dream, dream. Once you are done, enter both salary figures, minimum and maximum, and any notes you want to add, such as to justify the maximum. You may also want to add any non-monetary rewards you seek from the optional exercise coming next. Add all of this onto pedal 6, the preferred salary and level of responsibility pedal. Pedal 6, worksheet number 2, an optional exercise. Other rewards besides money. If you do check off things on this list, arrange your answers in order of importance to you and then add them to the pedal. Other rewards include adventure, challenge, respect, influence, popularity, etc. You'll find the complete list in the PDF files included with this audiobook. Now, on to the seventh side of who you are. I am a person who prefers certain places to live. Seventh pedal. My preferred places to live. Goal in filling out this pedal: to define in what part of the country or the world you would most like to work and live and be happiest, if you ever have a choice. Also to resolve a conflict, should it arise, between you and your partner as to where you want to live after you retire or make your next career move. What you are looking for: having a clearer picture about what you hope for in life, now or later. Now, if you're able to move and want to make a wise decision as to where. Later, if you're currently tied down to a particular place because I need to be near my kids or my ailing parents or whatever, in which case this becomes a planning for the future, retirement or earlier. It's important to think about the future now because an opportunity may come along when you least expect it, and you might pass right by it unless you've given it some thought and instantly recognize it. Form of the entries on your pedal. You can stay general: city, suburbs, rural, up in the mountains, on the coast, or overseas. Or you can get very specific if you're really ready to move, naming names and places, as this exercise will teach you to do. Example of a good pedal. First preference, Jackson, Wyoming. Second preference, Honolulu. Third preference, New York City. Example of a bad pedal. The West, a suburb, snow. Why bad? Too broad. Doesn't really offer any help in making a decision, and it isn't prioritized, as a good pedal must be. Pedal 7, worksheet number 1. A chart. What I liked or disliked about places I have lived. Directions for doing this exercise. Find the geographical preferences chart in the PDF files included with this audiobook and copy it onto a larger 11-inch by 17-inch piece of paper or cardboard. And if you are doing this exercise with a partner, make a copy for them too, so that each of you is working on a clean copy of your own and can follow these instructions independently. Now, as to how you fill out this 8-column chart. Column 1. In column 1, you should list all the places where you have ever lived. If you are doing this exercise with a partner, they should make their own list on their own worksheet. Column 2. In column 2, you should list all the factors you disliked and still do about each place. The negative factors do not have to be put exactly opposite the place in column 1. The names in column 1 exist simply as pegs on which to hang your memory. If the same factors keep repeating, just put a check mark after the first listing of that factor every time it repeats. Keep going until you have listed all the factors you disliked or hated about each and every place you named in column 1. Now, in effect, throw away column 1. Discard it from your thoughts. The negative factors were what you were after. Column 1 has served its purpose. As you go, if you recall some things you liked about any place, list those factors at the bottom of the next column, column 3. Column 3. Look at column 2, your list of negative factors, and in column 3 try to list each one's opposite, or near opposite. For example, the sun never shone there would, in column 3, be turned into mostly sunny all year round. It will not always be the exact opposite. For example, the negative factor rains all the time does not necessarily translate into the positive sunny all the time. It might be something like sunny at least 200 days a year. It's your call. Keep going until every negative factor in column 2 is turned into its opposite, a positive factor in column 3. Don't forget to note any positive factors you listed at the bottom of column 3 when you were working on column 2. Column 4. In column 4, now, list the positive factors in column 3 in the order of most important to you down to the least important to you. For example, if you were looking at and trying to name a new town, city, or place where you could be happy and flourish, what is the first thing you would look for? Would it be good weather, or lack of crime, or good schools, or access to cultural opportunities, such as music, art, museums, or whatever? Or would it be inexpensive housing, etc., etc.? Rank all the factors in column 4. Use a 10-item prioritizing grid if you need to. Show and tell. Once done, list on a blank sheet of paper those top 10 factors in order of importance to you, and show it to everyone you meet for the next 10 days with the ultimate question, can you think of any place that has all 10 of these factors, or at least the top 5? Jot down any and all of their suggestions on the back of the sheet. When the 10 days are up, look at the back of that sheet and circle the 3 places that seem the most interesting to you. If there's only a partial overlap between your dream factors and the places your friends and acquaintances can come up with, make sure the overlap is in the factors that count the most. Column 5. Now you have some names that you will want to find out more about, so that you can eventually figure out which would be your absolute favorite place to live, and your second, and your third as backups. Enter those 3 places in column 5. Then copy them, plus your top 5 geographical factors, onto petal number 7, preferred places to live, on the flower diagram. Column 6. If you are doing this with a partner, skip column 5. Instead, when you have finished your column 4, look at your partner's column 4 and copy it into column 6. The numbering of your list in column 4 was 1, 2, 3, 4, etc. So you need a different numbering system for your partner's list as you copy it into column 6. Let us say A, B, C, D, etc. Column 7. Now, in column 7, both of you can combine your column 4 with column 6 on your respective worksheets. Combine the two lists in this manner. First, your partner's top favorite geographical factor, A, then your top favorite geographical factor, 1, then your partner's second most important favorite geographical factor, B, then yours, 2, etc., until you have 20 favorite geographical factors, yours and your partner's, listed in order in column 7. Both of you are now working on the same list. Show and tell for 2 people. For now, don't work on all 20. Narrow it down to the top 10 in column 7 and list these on a blank sheet of paper. then both of you should show that list to everyone you meet for the next 10 days with the same question as before. Can you think of any place that has these 10 factors or at least the top 5? Jot down their suggestions on the back of the sheet. When the 10 days are up, you and your partner should look at the back of your sheets and agree on which 3 places look the most interesting to the two of you. If there's only a partial overlap between your dream factors and the places your friends and acquaintances suggested, make sure the overlap is in the factors that matter the most to the two of you, that is, those at the top of your list in column 7. Column 8. Now you have the names of places that you will want to find out more about until you are sure which is the absolute favorite place to live for both of you, plus your second and your third as backups. Enter in column 8. Finally, both of you should put the names of those top 3 places, plus your top 5 geographical factors, onto petal 7, the preferred places to live petal, on both of your flower diagrams. Conclusion for petal 7. Does all this seem like just too much work? Well, there are 2 shortcuts you may want to try. The first is a website called Teleport, teleport.org. Try it. See if it helps you at all. One reader said about a similar site, "I found it useful. It showed me towns I'd never thought about." Another alternative: have everyone in the house throw darts at a map of the U.S. or wherever that you've pinned to a dartboard. One family did this after they couldn't agree on anything. See what place the most darts came near. For them, it came out Denver. So, Denver it was. I am a person who has completed my flower. Readers have asked to see an example of that one piece of paper all filled out. Rich W. Feller, a student of mine back in 1982, now a world-famous professor and past president of the National Career Development Association, filled out his flower, which is included in the PDF files. He said that one piece of paper has been his lifelong companion ever since and his guiding star. The petals then were slightly different. Rich Feller first put his personal picture together over 30 years ago. Here are his comments about its usefulness since and how that one piece of paper helped him, how he's used it, and how it's changed. What the parachute flower has meant to me. More than anything I've gained from an academic life, my flower has given me hope, direction, and a lens to satisfaction. Using it to assess my life direction during crisis, career moves, and stretch assignments, it helps me define and hold to personal commitments. In many ways, it's my guiding light. Data within my flower became and remain the core of any success and satisfaction I have achieved. After I first filled out my own flower diagram in a 2-week workshop with Dick Bowles back in 1982, I decided to teach the flower to others. My academic position has allowed me to do this abundantly. Having now taught the flower to thousands of counselors and career development and human resource specialists, I continually use it with clients and in my own transitional retirement planning. I'm overwhelmed with how little has changed within my flower over the years. My flower is the best of what I am. Its petals are my compass, and using my favorite skills is the mirror to a joyful day. I trust the wisdom within that one piece of paper. It has guided my work and my life ever since 1982, and it has helped my wife and I define our hopes for our son. The process of filling out and acting on that one piece of paper taught me a lot. Specifically, it taught me the importance of the following 10 things, often running contrary to what my studies and doctoral work had taught me previously. I learned from my flower the importance of 1. Chasing after passions, honoring strengths, and respecting skill identification. 2. challenging societal definitions of balance and success. 3. Committing to something bigger than oneself. 4. Living authentically and with joy. 5. Being good at what matters to oneself and its relationship to opportunity. 6. Finding pleasure in all that one does. 7. Staying focused on well-being and life satisfaction. 8. Personal clarity and responsibility for designing possible selves. 9. Letting the world know, humbly but clearly, what we want. 10. Coaching people amidst a world of abundance where individuals yearn for meaning and purpose more than they hunger for possessions, abject compliance with society's expectations, or simply fitting in. This technologically enhanced global workplace we now face in the 21st century certainly challenges all we thought we knew about our life roles. Maintaining clarity, learning agility, and identifying development plans have become elevated to new and critical importance if we are to maintain choice. As a result, I've added the following 4 emphases to Rich's flower: have, do, learn, and give. That is to say, I try to keep a running list, constantly updated, of 10 things I want to 1. Have, 2. Do, 3. Learn, 4. Give. Through the practice of answering the 4 questions listed above, I can measure change in my growth and development. I feel so fortunate to have the opportunity to share with others how much I gained from the wisdom and hope embedded within Rich's Flower. I humbly offer my resume, home location and design, and family commitments on my website at www.mychs.colostate.edu/rich.feller. I'd be honored to share my journey and encourage others to nurture and shine light on their garden as well. I believe you'll find about 90% of the flower's items influence our daily experience. Rich Feller, Professor of Counseling and Career Development, University Distinguished Teaching Scholar, Colorado State University, Fort Collins, Colorado. Okay, like Rich, you've now got your completed flower. Nice diagram. What do you do with it? Well, that's the subject of our next chapter. You've got to be careful if you don't know where you're going, because you might not get there. Yogi Berra, 1925 to 2015. Chapter 6. You get to choose where you work. Some of you will look at your completed flower exercise and have an instant flash of recognition. Wow, I see what I want to do with my life. I'm excited. Others of you will need a more carefully reasoned series of steps to find that out. Here are 5 steps that job hunters or career changers have found tremendously helpful to take, and in this order. Number 1. Find out what careers or work your flower points to. Number 2. Try on some of those jobs before you decide which ones to pursue. Number 3. Find out what kinds of organizations have such jobs. Number 4. Find names of particular places that interest you. Number 5. Research that place thoroughly before formally approaching them. First, you need to find out what careers or jobs your flower points to. 1. Look at your completed flower diagram, and from the 5th petal of the flower, choose the top 3 of your favorite knowledges, or fields of interest, favorite fields, or fields of fascination, whatever you want to call them. All nouns. On one piece of blank paper, say 8.5 inches by 11 inches, or on your mobile device, copy these in the top half of that page, in their order of importance to you, most important at the top. Beneath them all, midway down the page, draw a line straight across. 2. Then, look at the skills pedal on your completed flower diagram and choose your top 5 favorite transferable skills, all verbs. Copy them down in order below the line. 3. Now, take this page and show it to at least 5 friends, family members, or professionals whom you know. Ask them what jobs or work this page suggests to them. Tell them you just want them to take some wild guesses, combining as many of the 8 factors on that page as possible. Plan B. If they absolutely draw a blank, tell them that interests or special knowledges in the top half of the page usually point toward a career field, while transferable skills in the bottom half usually point toward a job title or job level in that field. So ask them, in the case of your favorite special knowledges, what career fields do these suggest to you? And in the case of your transferable skills, what job title or jobs do these skills suggest to you? If possible, you or they must combine 2 or 3 of your knowledges, fields, into one specialty. That's what can make you unique, with very little competition from others. Here's how to go about doing that. Let us say your 3 favorite knowledges are gardening and carpentry and a limited knowledge of psychiatry. What you want to do is use all 3 expertises, not just 1 of them, if you possibly can. So put those 3 favorite knowledges on a series of overlapping circles. Now, to figure out how to combine these 3, imagine that each circle is a person. That is, in this case, psychiatrist, carpenter, and gardener. You ask yourself which person took the longest to get trained in their specialty. The answer here is the psychiatrist. The reason you ask yourself this question is that the person with the longest training is most likely to have the broadest overview of things. So you go to see a psychiatrist, either at a private clinic or at a university or hospital. You ask for 15 minutes of his or her time and pay them if necessary. Then you ask the psychiatrist if he or she knows how to combine psychiatry with 1, just 1 initially, of your other 2 favorite knowledges. Let's say you choose gardening. Doctor, do you know anyone who combines a knowledge of psychiatry with a knowledge of gardening or plants? Since I'm talking about a true story here, I can tell you what the psychiatrist said. Yes, in working with catatonic patients, we often give them a plant to take care of so they know there's something that is depending on them for its future and its survival. And how would I also employ a knowledge of carpentry? Well, in building the planters, that's a start, isn't it? This is the way you learn how to combine your 3 favorite knowledges all at once, no matter what those 3 may be. 4. Jot down everything these people suggest to you on your computer, iPad, smartphone, or small pad of paper, whether you like their suggestions or not. This is just brainstorming for the moment. 5. After you have done this for a week or so with everyone you meet, sit down and look at all these notes. Anything helpful or valuable here? If you see some useful suggestions, circle them and determine to explore them. If nothing looks interesting, go talk to 5 more of your friends, acquaintances, or people you know in the business world or nonprofit sector. Repeat as necessary. 6. As you ponder any suggestions that look worth exploring, consider the fact we saw in Chapter 5 that all jobs can be described as working primarily with people, or working primarily with information or data, or working primarily with things. Most jobs involve all 3, but which is your primary preference? It is often your favorite skill that will give you the clue. If it doesn't, then go back and look at the whole transferable skills pedal on your flower diagram. What do you think? Are your favorite skills weighted more toward working with people, or toward working with information or data, or toward working with things? 7. Just remember what you're trying to do here. Find some names for your flower. Typically, if you show it to enough family, friends, or colleagues, you will end up with about 40 suggestions. Don't ever think to yourself, "Well, I see what it is that I would die to be able to do, but I know there is no job in the world like that." Dear friend, you do not know any such thing. Now, I grant you that after you have completed it, you may not be able to find all that you want, down to the last detail, but you'd be surprised at how much of your dream you may be able to find. Sometimes it will be found in stages. One retired man I know, who had been a senior executive with a publishing company, found himself bored to death in retirement after he turned 65. He decided he didn't care what field he worked in at that point, so he contacted his favorite business acquaintance, who told him apologetically, "Times are tough. We just don't have anything open that matches or requires your abilities. Right now, all we need is someone in our mailroom." The 65-year-old executive said, "I'll take that job." He did, and over the ensuing years, steadily advanced once again to just the job he wanted as a senior executive in that organization, where he utilized all his prized skills for a number of years. Finally, he retired for the second time at the age of 85. Always keep in mind your dream. Get as close to it as you can. Then be patient. You never know what doors will open up. Second, you need to try on jobs before you decide which ones to pursue. You know, when you go shopping at a clothing store, you try on different outfits that you see in their window or on their racks. Why do you try them on? Well, the clothes that look terrific in the window don't always look so hot when you see them on you. They don't hang quite right, etc. It's the same with careers. Ones that sound terrific in your imagination don't always look so great when you actually see them up close and personal. What you want, of course, is a career that looks terrific in the window and on you. So you need to go talk to people who are already doing that kind of job or career that you're thinking about. The website LinkedIn should be invaluable to you in locating the names of such people. Once you find them, if they live nearby, ask for 19 minutes of their time face-to-face, Starbucks, and keep to your word, unless during the chat they insist they want to go on talking. Some workers, not all, are desperate to find someone who will actually listen to them. You may come as an answer to their prayers. Here are some questions that will help you when you're talking with workers who are actually doing the career or job you think you might like to do. How did you get into this work? What do you like the most about it? What do you like the least about it? And where else could I find people who do this kind of work? You should always ask them for more than one name here, so that if you run into a dead end at any point, you can easily go visit the other names they suggested. If at any point in these informational interviews with workers, it becomes more and more clear to you that this career, occupation, or job you are exploring definitely doesn't fit you, then the last question above gets turned into a different kind of inquiry. Do you have any ideas as to who else I could talk to about my skills and special knowledges or interests who might know what other careers use the same skills and knowledge? If they come up with names, go visit the people they suggest. If they can't think of anyone, ask them, "If you don't know of anyone, who do you think might know?" Sooner or later, as you do this informational interviewing with workers, you'll find a career that fits you just fine. It uses your favorite skills. It employs your favorite special knowledges or fields of interest. Okay, then you must ask how much training, etc., it takes to get into that field or career. You ask the same people you've been talking to previously. More times than not, you will hear bad news. They will tell you something like, in order to be hired for this job, you have to have a master's degree and 10 years experience at it. Is that so? Keep in mind that no matter how many people tell you that such and such